Well, it's good to be here. I appreciate your all's presence. How many of you all are elders here? Because I don't know everybody. Okay. Well, appreciate you. And then the rest of you guys have been invited, as I understand it. And, you know, this last quarter in Knoxville, where I preached, we had a quarter where we did church leadership, and the elders were there, and they invited men to be in there. And one of the things that we did, tell me if you've ever had this experience. Churches will talk about, I don't know where you all come from. Prior to my time in Knoxville, I was in Glasgow, and prior to that, I'd graduated from school, and I went back to my home state of West Virginia, and I preached 5 years there. But I've seen leadership classes, like the elders will say, let's have a leadership class. And what they meant by it was, let's teach the boys how to pass the collection trays and, you know, lead prayers and, you know, lead singing, beat time, and all the, and I get it. That is leadership. I mean, we're preparing guys to be able to do things, but there's so much more than just that. And so we spent the quarter in just talking about scenarios. There are things that the average person would have no idea what elders go through and the decisions that they have to make. And I find it interesting that we would pair up guys, and those who had no eldership experience would be faced with a scenario, and here's what they would do. And then we had an elders group, and what would they do? And the answers were vastly different. And what ended up being the difference was the guys who weren't elders had no idea of the ripple effect that certain things had. And when it was brought to their attention, they were like, oh yeah, we should have taken that into consideration. But it was just beyond their scope. And so I think it's good to have time where you sit down and you talk about the work and why you do it and how you do it, and to get people involved, get guys involved in it that can someday take the helm as well. I was going to bring PowerPoint, and I use PowerPoint all the time. And so when I go away, it's my one reprieve from PowerPoint. And so what I did, though, is I made copies, and these are what you'll have today are copies of what we're going to do tomorrow, too. I just stapled it all together. I was going to have blanks that you fill in to make it more interactive, but I thought, if I do blanks, then the people that come tomorrow won't know the information that goes into the blanks that we did today. So if you'll take one of these, you'll have information. On what we're going to do tonight. I'll go ahead and say this too. I'm going to say it again. You'll hear it again on Sunday, because I'll probably end up saying it. But somebody's already asked me how tall I was. And usually people will say, how tall are you? And then they'll follow, did you play ball? People will also come up to you and just, like, they'll tell tall jokes all the time. Like, how tall, how's the weather up there? You know, like, it's the funniest thing. And so years ago, I decided on, I've got to have a comeback to all that. So I was actually in a lectureship in West Virginia. And a guy, I didn't even get down out of the pulpit. He like met me up on the pulpit when I was done. And he just like got right up in my chest and looked up at me. And he said, how tall are you anyway? Just hateful sounding. And I said, I'm 6'6". And he said, I bet you played basketball. And I said, well, yeah, I did a little. And then he turned and walked away. And I said, well, how tall are you? And he said, I'm 5'4". And I said, I bet you played miniature golf, didn't you? But he didn't laugh like you just did. Do what? I know it was mean, but I enjoyed it. I'm sorry. And his face turned red, but he never asked me again. So anyway, I thought I would go ahead and answer. If you're sitting there going, I wonder how tall that guy is. So here's what I want to do. I want to talk about some of the more practical things tomorrow and some leadership situations, scenarios, some of the perils of leadership and some of the things that you deal with. Tonight, I wanted to talk about... Really, the primary purpose is just encouragement. To tell you some things, you know, those of you who are leader, how many, were you elders through COVID? Did you have some tough decisions to make during that? I mean, that had to have been exhausting. I know the experience that we had at Carnes. Our elders were trying to take information, be compliant with the government at the same time, and weigh, nobody knew anything about this pandemic. We hadn't been through a pandemic before. Well, we had, but it was in 1918, and nobody's living back then, you know, that could tell us anything. And so, in the course of this COVID situation, we ended up losing 60 members. Because they didn't like the policies that the elders said we were going to take. And so they left to go to a place that they weren't going to like the policies they had either. The preachers in Knoxville, we have a little chat where we Zoomed every month. And everybody was saying, well, we just lost this family and they went over. No matter what position you took, you lost families. Because nobody could be satisfied. And really what it demonstrated is that there's a whole lot of members that just will not follow. That's what it boiled down to. And they were going to do what they wanted, regardless of what anybody else, how they tried to lead them. So there are a lot of difficulties. And I know our elders were exhausted when that was over. I want to give you reasons tonight why you need to be renewed and encouraged because of the work you're doing. And to those who are not elders but are here because somebody thinks that you have potential qualities or you're a leader in the congregation, I want to share some thoughts with you that will hopefully motivate you to pursue leadership. Do any of you have like a background? I don't want to lecture the whole time. I'm going to ask some questions, and if you have any questions, just raise your hand or holler at me. But do any of you have memories of like somebody that was really a good leader in the church where you grew up, or somebody like I have? William McMahon and John Cunningham and Arnold Wright. Those were three men. They weren't preachers, but they were three godly elders at the church in Chester, West Virginia, where I grew up as a child. I can think of specific things that they did that were impressive. Like they went through and they said, you know what? If a kid goes through our education program at this church, we want them to know certain things by the time they leave. And they took it upon themselves. This is separate from the education program. They would just, before, as class was getting started on Sunday morning, they'd come into your class and they'd say, Steve, did you learn your memory verse? And I didn't want to let the elders down. You know, there's this guy. I hated to say no, so I would learn. And they had broken down key verses that they wanted you to know a lifetime. And there weren't a whole bunch of them. It's not just like flooding you with stuff that you memorize, you cram for, and then you never remember again. These were like really important verses that you'll use the rest of your life. And they got those, put them down on paper, and broke them down into age group appropriate verses. And they'd quiz us every time class started. And it's just like 5 minutes, and then they'd go. But the verses that I know today, I learned from those guys given those verses, and I've used them over and over and over again in my preaching. Do you know of anybody, like, do you guys, does anybody come to mind in your life that has been a good leader? Can you think of anyone?
I would say Jerry Hopkins myself.
Where, is he from here?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I've only gone to one place.
Yeah, yeah. Anybody else have any elders that you think just stood out growing up or in your, where you've lived or anything? Yeah. How about preachers? Do you have any preachers that like were meaningful to you that maybe were names that like you listened to them or anything? Do you have anybody? When I was growing up and in college age and stuff, I had certain people that meant a lot to me. My dad was probably at the, well, no, probably, he was at the top of the list. He was a preacher. Johnny Ramsey, have you ever heard of him? Johnny was a good friend of my dad, and he supplied me, every time he wrote a book, he'd just send me one and send me little notes of encouragement. Tom Holland, have you ever... You know, Tom, there are people like that that meant, you know, a tremendous amount in my deciding to become a preacher. The interesting thing, though, that I find about all those people, and probably maybe the ones that you mentioned, they all have something in common. They're dead. Did you realize that? Are the guys that you mentioned still alive? Yeah, okay, one. All the preachers that I had growing up that I looked up to and motivated me and encouraged me, they're gone. And those elders that I talked about, they're gone. And so my question is, what are we doing to replace these guys that are gone, and better yet, what are we doing to replace our leaving this world? This past year, well, man, since 2000, it's been quite an ordeal for me. I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in the year 2000 during the middle of COVID. Our daughter's house got hit by a tornado. They luckily survived in a closet. Then I had this nagging pain. I went to the doctor, and he did. I thought maybe I had a gallstone or something, and I had cancer everywhere. I mean, it's in my brain, my spine, my lungs, my adrenal system, my lymphatic system. It was everywhere, and they gave me 3 months to live. So I've been to MD Anderson. Treatments have been really successful, and right now they don't see any cancer in me, which is pretty amazing. But when I wake up in the morning, I'm very conscious that I have another day to live. You know, like, wow, it's borrowed time. That's how I see it. And I want to try to make the best use of it. But I am acutely aware that I may not be here, you know, 5 years from now. Who am I influencing to step up and be the next generation of preachers or elders? I'm afraid that we've talked too much in front of people about the hardships of the eldership. There are a lot of joys of being an elder. And if you're so focused on the hardship, maybe you need to back off. And that's what maybe tonight's lesson will be. There's a lot of stuff that you ought to be thankful that you're able to serve God in that capacity. But not everybody has that mindset. I know a man, we had a preacher's meeting, or not a preacher's meeting, a church business meeting on one occasion. And something came up and he got frustrated. He was in anger and he like said, you know what, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of the, and he was just vented in front of the men that were present. And he said, I quit. I don't want to be an elder. I haven't wanted to be an elder for the last year. And so I resign. And he just stormed out of the business meeting. And all the men of the church heard him say that. The other elders heard him say that. And then we had an elders preachers meeting the next week. And when I got there, that guy was sitting in an elders preachers meeting. And I said, well, I thought you quit. What are you doing? He said, well, I went home and I told my wife I didn't want to do it anymore and that I'd quit and she wouldn't let me. And so I'm back. What do you mean she wouldn't let you? He doesn't want to be an elder. He expressed that. But his wife said, no, you got to. You have to. And so he was serving reluctantly, which doesn't 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1 address that? Can somebody read that verse? What does that say? If any man desires, you know, it's this is a work that is for people who desire this work. And if you got to have your arm twisted, you don't need to be doing this. You're not qualified to do it. Another man on one occasion was an elder, and we were talking about we were having a leadership setting. We were all sitting in this big circle, all the elders, deacons, and preachers, and we're sitting in this circle, and we're talking about, why did you become what you are? Like, what led you to that? And he said, well, and this was one of the elders. He said, well, I never wanted to be an elder. I just had no desire for it, but my dad told me it'd make me a better man, and so I went ahead and did it. I was like, do you not read the qualifications? If you don't desire it, you're not qualified for it. But that's, you know, what, and the reason a lot of people don't desire it, my thinking, is that they've heard too much about how hard it is. Oh man, you don't know how hard the elders have it. They have to put up with, and we talk about the struggles of the eldership and the problems in the people in the congregation, and we talk about it not behind closed doors or discreetly to people that help us, but we talk about it in front of people that are impressioned by it. And who wants more problems in their life? Like, why would I want to do that? And quite frankly, sometimes what children are hearing is what their mom and dad talk about on the way home from church, roasting the elders for, you know, can you believe they did this or said that or are going to do this? And who wants to grow up and be what their mom and dad hold with contempt? You know, that... there's no motivation for anybody to desire or aspire to that by the way we talk in front of a lot of younger guys. And so I think there's a change that needs to take place there. The work and the talk that we do about it should be more about the privilege of serving God than the burden of the people. And it should be more praise for them and less criticism of them. I know as a preacher, and it's this way, I think, probably with most people, but I can preach a sermon and 50 people can go out and say, that was really good. And then there's one guy that walks out and says, nice try. You know, I remember the nice try. I'm like, what did I do? You know, what was wrong with it? And the elders probably hear far more than their share of criticism, and we fail to praise them for the decisions that they do make and the leadership that they are involved in that has worked out for good. So here's what I think is, we're going to get into the, I kind of messed up in the outline there, but I'm getting there. We'll get to point one here in just a minute. But I find this interesting. McDonald's is you don't have to have a master's degree to work at an entry-level position in McDonald's. But you know what? If you want a job in McDonald's, you have to go through training, don't you? Like, they're going to teach you how to flip a burger. They're going to teach you how to put ketchup and mustard and all that kind of, you have to have training to do McDonald's. And that's why I think this is really important. This is the most important job anybody could ever do.
Amen.
You're leading the people of God. You're shepherding souls that are eternity bound. And to go into that with no training or no preparation or no continual training, you know, there are a lot of churches that don't do it. And I praise you for having the insight to say, let's sit down for a while and talk about leadership. I think that's really important. We need leadership. And I would like to give you a three-step process that, you know, we just talked about how people have passed and they're gone. I'll give you this illustration, but it just kind of boggled my mind. And it's been a few years ago now. I think it was in 2014. If I could think of the guy's name. Oh, it's less me. His first name was Frank. But he made national news in 2014 because he died. And in 2014, he was over 100 years old. And you might think, well, that's why he made the news. It wasn't because he was a really old guy. You know why he made the news? He was the last U.S. World War I veteran. He died in 2014. And that just like, that was like one of those, it just hit me really hard. Because I remember like in high school, we had like veterans parades. And I grew up in a little small town of about 2,000. And they'd go down the middle of the street, you know, for Veterans Day. And you would have like the World War I guys march by and the World War II and then Korea and then Vietnam. They would all march by. There's no more World War I guys. You know, and I hadn't thought of that. It was just like, they're all gone. Everybody from that generation is gone. And that's what's happened to all the people that I've looked up to in the church, that as a young person growing up that I admired and tried to follow and emulate, they're all gone. And now I'm 61, and, you know, what are we going to do for the next generation? How does that happen? It doesn't happen by default. Leaders aren't made by default. That doesn't turn out so well. Leaders are groomed and they're mentored, and there's a development process in them. And that's what I like about tonight, is that there are guys here that aren't necessarily church leaders in the sense of, you know, being an elder or maybe even a deacon. But there's growth. There's things to aim for, development, character development that we can work on. And so I'd like for us to turn to our Bibles. I want you to go back to the book of Numbers. Because a number of years ago, I had to preach on the topic of passing the baton. That was the title of the topic that was given to me, and I thought, what am I going to do with that? Who best? So I began to think, who are some examples of people that pass the baton to other people? And I'll tell you, not everybody has done that successfully. Back in, it was in the 90s, I guess. I'm a I'm very nationalistic when it comes to the Olympics. I want us to win all the gold medals, you know, and we were supposed to win the 4x100 relay race on both men and women, and both the men and the women dropped the baton in that race, and we didn't medal at all. And I remember that, and I thought, you know, that's really a good spiritual lesson there, because how many churches are dropping the baton? How many elderships are not, they don't have anybody to hand off to because they've not been groomed and they've not trained for this moment. And just as we didn't get any medals, there are a lot of churches that are floundering today because no one has prepared them to take the baton. And we have a great example in Numbers, and there's, it makes a perfect sermon. There's 3 points to it. And it's how God wanted Moses to hand off leadership of the Israelites to Joshua. And it went smoothly. And the principles that were involved, the specific things that God told him to do, man, they are so relevant and practical. And I want to show you those, because as elders, as you get older and you realize, who are we going to hand this off to? You need to be doing these things. And so, first of all, Moses, why is he needing to hand off the baton anyway? What did he do that God said, you're not going to enter the promised land? Yeah, he struck the rock. You know, and that was an act of disobedience. God told him to speak to the rock, and he struck it. And so God said, no, you're done. You're not coming into the promised land. And so there's going to be a transition. Moses is going to die. And who's going to be the leader of the Israelites? Well, Joshua. And so here's the plan that God made. Now, there are three things specifically. In Numbers chapter 27, begin with me in verse 16, and I'm reading from the New King James. He said, let the Lord, the God of spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation who may go out before them and go in before them, who may lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord may not be like sheep which have no shepherd. And that's the situation we're in churches. Who are we going to have that's going to take our place and be leaders of the people so that the church doesn't flounder in a lack of leadership? You hear of all the innovations that are taking place in churches today. You know, in Tennessee, there are like 4 churches right now that have just made women elders. Did you know that? You know, I don't even know how you go there. I don't, if there's, I mean, those are deliberate, rebellious actions. Yes, yes. And those are actions, they're not like, you know, I can see where they're going to, that's just, in my thinking, you've just rejected Bible authority with that. But how does that happen? We blame a whole lot of preachers for, you know, preaching this and being weak in the pulpit and all those kind of things, and they do deserve blame. But why aren't the elders telling them, get out of the pulpit? We won't tolerate that. You see, that's the problem. When we don't have men who have been trained and who are prepared to take the baton and run with it, the church is left as sheep without a shepherd. And so God said, I don't want that to happen to my people. You're not going to be here. And so we need a man to replace you so that he can go in and out in front of the people and be leaders to them so that they're not scattered. So here's his plan of action, verse 18. And the Lord said to Moses, take Joshua, the son of Nun, with you, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hands on him. So, number one, Joshua knew that Moses had selected him to be his successor. It wasn't one of these things that Moses had in the back of his mind, you know, when I'm gone, I think that so-and-so will take my place, and so-and-so's walking around, has no idea the plans that Moses has for him. You know, Moses made it clear by God's instruction, I want Joshua to know that you had plans for him to be your replacement. Are we doing that? Like, do we see men in the congregation that would make good leaders in the next generation? But we have it in our mind, but we're not conveying that information to them. I'm just saying, maybe we need to go to some guys and sit them down and say, we're really impressed with your spiritual development. We like what we see in you, and we believe that you're going to make a great leader in the church, and you have my backing. You have my support, and anything that I can do to help you as you continue to progress, we need to be having those kind of conversations with guys. Otherwise, they don't know. And what do you think there's any benefit to telling a man, for the elders of a congregation, to tell a man, maybe you're not qualified right now. There may be family matters that disqualify you, but right now, we see in you a great deal of potential, and we just want to encourage you to keep it up, because we see you as being the leader, one of the leaders of this church. What do you think that would do to the guy that receives that kind of a, or is invited to a meeting in which they're told all this? What impact would that have on him?
Inspiration.
It would be an inspiration. I would almost feel, too, like it would not only be an inspiration, but it would be an obligation almost. Like, I can't let these guys down. They trust me. They believe in me. And there's a sense of accountability. Like, what, if I get derailed, or if I, like, coast in my spiritual development, I'll be letting those guys down. And I think God's plan is great. Moses, I want you to go and I want you to lay hands on Joshua. He knows good and well what you're doing. You're preparing him to be the next leader. And that's going to motivate and encourage him and maybe make him even feel more on fire because of the potential that Moses sees in him. I really think we need to be about that as leaders of the church. Find some guys that you think have great potential. Call them in and say, listen, we've been watching you. We've seen your growth. We've seen the way you lead your family. We've seen the way you interact with the flock. And we're really encouraged, and we really want to encourage you to pursue the day when you can take this baton and run with it. I'm telling you, you'll set those guys on fire if you have those kinds of conversations with them. And it will also give them a sense of duty to live up to your expectations for you. So that's where God starts. Number one, he tells Moses, lay your hands on them. Now Joshua knows, wow, Moses is wanting me to be the next leader. But there's more. Look at the very next verse in verse 19. Set him before Eleazar, the priest, and before all the congregation, and inaugurate him in their sight. What's the next thing he wants done? I want you, Moses, God saying, Moses, I want you to go lay your hands on Joshua so he knows. He's not just wondering. He knows that you expect him to take the baton and run with it. Then what does he want? Known. He wants the church to know your plans and intentions for this man. Why would that be important?
You can't lead without a following.
No question about who There's no question about who Moses selected. Have you ever, man, I have been fortunate because two of the places that I preached, the preacher that was before me was long tenured. One was over 20 years, and he was an elder. And when I moved there in Kentucky, he resigned as the preacher. Well, actually, he stepped down and was my associate, but he was also my elder. And so now I was 27 years old, and this man had preached twice as long as I was alive. And you don't think there were more than a few people that said, what's this kid know? He's still wet behind the ears. You know, he doesn't know anything. And why is he preaching and not Charles? Charles knows more Bible in his pinky than this young upstart does. There can be that kind of attitude from the congregation. And sometimes that happens, and the preachers, because of pride, like they eat it up and they let it go on instead of putting an end to it. And it creates division in the congregation. It's unhealthy. And then when I moved to Carnes, the preacher for, again, over 20 years, stayed on the staff as, well, in the school of preaching. And, you know, he sat in the pew while I preached. And I probably didn't do a funeral for the first 8 years of being at Carnes because he was there. He had been the preacher for 20 years. If somebody died, why do they want me? He's the one who knew them better, and which was totally fine. But there can be competition, but there wasn't because those men were godly men and they handled it in a way that supported me. But if you don't have that handled in that way, if you don't throw your weight behind the new guy, there's a natural tendency in people, or at least the propensity in people, to say, this guy's not as good as the other guy. Why? I mean, there's probably anybody. How come we didn't get a say in somebody else? There are all these negative kind of comments. Before I moved from Glasgow, I was there 8 months before I was able to move to Carnes. It had been announced that I was leaving, but I stayed there for 8 months, which was, I wouldn't recommend it, but at least this is what happened. My son was a senior in high school, and he wanted to graduate, and they said they would wait, and the church where I was working was fine with it because what I got to do is throw all my support during that time toward the new guy coming in. And I got to brag on him and I got to hand off the baton to him. And nobody had resentment toward him. They didn't see him as somebody who's trying to, you know, push me out and all those kind of things that sometimes happen in congregations. So here's what God said. I want you to let Joshua know. It'll create expectation in him. It'll bolster him. It'll make him feel good. It'll strengthen him. It'll encourage him. And then I want you to let the whole congregation know that you have his back, that you support him. The congregation loves Moses, and for Moses to say, and I love this guy, that wins the congregation for Joshua instead of who's this guy? He can't walk in the shoes of Moses. He can't even, you know, it just does away with all that. Moses has now gone before the people and said, this is the guy. You need to know he has my full backing and I'm for this, not against it. And then here's the third thing. Look at verse 20. And you shall give some of your authority to him, that all the congregation of the children of Israel may be obedient. Give some of your authority to him. Let there be a period of transition. It's not just, I quit today, he starts tomorrow. But there's a meshing of the two. You've already shown him that you're for him, and you've shown the people, this is the guy. I'm all for this transition. I encourage it. And to prove it, you begin to let him do some things that he's never done before, things that you used to do. This is a preacher and not an eldership, but I remember a preacher on one occasion had heart, what is that? Hardening of the arteries, and he wasn't thinking well. And he began saying things it was because of this. And the elders had to eventually take a class from him and say, you can't teach anymore. You're not thinking clearly. And he came in my office and he said, if I can't teach, I might as well be dead. Like, I have no purpose in living if I can't teach. And that is so wrong-headed. Just because you can't do what you once did, and just because somebody else may be doing something that you used to do, it's no excuse to have that attitude. When David fought Goliath, that's the huge victory. You know, we know David for his battle with Goliath. Did you know that David fought another giant? Did you know that? We know the story of Goliath. That was like, wow, David's the hero. The women are singing, Saul has killed his thousands, David is 10,000. That's a great opportunity there. But a little known battle in 2 Samuel, I think it's chapter 21, he fought Goliath's brother. Did you know that? His name was Ishbi-Benob, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Ishbi-Benob thought that he, it depends on what translation you have, that he had killed David or that he could kill David. In other words, the battle wasn't going well. And if it wasn't for David's friend, Abishai, who came and killed the giant, David would have died in that. This one wasn't a stone to the forehead, ta-da. This one didn't go so well. And the people grabbed David, all the soldiers, and they said to him, after everything was done, the battle was over, the Philistines had fled, they said to David, you're never going out to battle with us again. Now, David could have pouted and said, how come? Man, I don't have any use to live. If I can't do what I used to do, then man, what's the sense of me even living? They weren't telling David he wasn't useful. They were saying, your role has changed. That's all. And they said, we don't want you to go out in battle anymore because if you get killed, you will quench the light of Israel. He wasn't valueless. He was still very valuable. But they were just simply saying, it's time to transition. And so there comes a time when we need to start including other people and taking some of the things that we do and entrusting others with it. And that transition helps make the big transition easier. I don't know if you've ever done this before, and it's not appropriate for every setting, but the elders of Carnes will from time to time tap a guy on the shoulder and do what we're talking about here and say, we see tremendous promise in you and we want to encourage you and we want you to know a little bit about what it's like. And will you make some visits with us as we make visits? They include him in the work that they're doing. Sometimes they let him go to elders meetings. Now, they're not sensitive things that he doesn't need to, you know, they're going to do that separate and he's not going to be privy to those kind of things. But there's a lot of things that happen in elders meetings that aren't sensitive matters and they participate in that to get their feet wet, you know, and to understand, oh, this is what it's like. These are some of the things to expect. But what they were doing is, in essence, what Moses is told to do. Give him some work to do. Let him see what it's like. And so I really like, and man, it just makes an easy sermon to preach. Because here's a transition where Moses passes the baton to Joshua, and God said, do three things. You let Joshua know you had plans for him. And you let the congregation know that you got your arm around that guy and that you are with him and defend him and approve of him. And that'll stop a whole lot of talk. And then number three, include him. Start backing off and let him help. Give him some authority to do some of the things that you used to do. And that's what happened, and it worked really well for Moses and Joshua. And I think that makes a great plan for elderships today. As I said, it won't be long till we have to make a transition. When I moved to Carnes just 13 years ago, there are only two men that are elders that were elders that hired me, because they've passed away in 13 years. They're all gone. And we've had more come in, and even some of them have died in that time. I don't want to be depressing, but you know, we're not going to live forever. And what plans, what preparation have we made for the future? So I want to encourage you to do that. And maybe some of the guys that are sitting here or some of the guys that you want to tap on the shoulder and say, hey, we want to talk to you because we see tremendous promise in you. And encourage them according to that model here in Numbers chapter 27. Now, I'll tell you what. Let's take... We have another half hour, is that right? Let's take about a 5-minute break so you can get up and move around and wake up or go to the restroom or something, and then we'll come back. And I want to spend the rest of the time just giving you some encouragement and tell you why you need to be proud that you're doing the work that you're doing. All right.